call the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee meeting to order. There we go. Today is Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022. The time is 10:03 a.m. Please silence your cell phones. This is Chair Natasha Von Imhoff in the Anchorage LIO Denali Conference Room. We have the following members present in the room. We have Vice Chair Chris Tuck. We have Representative Foster. We have Representative Kaufman. We have Representative Josephson. We have Representative Sponholz, and we have Senator Cliff Bishop on the phone. We do have a quorum to do business. We have...
Madam Chair?
Yes? Oh, yeah, thank you. We have Senator Machicki. I just see you on the screen now. Thank you very much for calling in.
Of course.
We have LAO moderators Dana from Anchorage and Doug from Juneau, Shannon McKay in House Records from Juneau, and Rose Foley here. So thank you so much. Oh, did I not say Stedman? Oh, we have Senator Stedman. I apologize. The alternates are not expected to vote today, but we'll vote if we need for a quorum. So at this point, I'd like to modify the agenda. The RPL discussion will now occur at the end after the executive session. It will be our last item of business. Is there any objection to reordering the agenda? Seeing and hearing none, the agenda has been reordered. So our first item on the agenda today is the approval of the minutes. Vice Chair Chris Tuck, may I have a motion to approve the minutes?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee go into executive session.
To approve the minutes of the following meeting.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee approve the minutes of the following meetings as presented. July 14th, 2022, August 10th, 2022, and September 6th, 2022.
Is there any objection in approving the meeting minutes? Seeing none, the minutes are approved as presented. Our next order of business is the discussion of a proposed change to the LBNA handbook. Over the past year, we've had conversations, due in large part for due to Representative Kaufman, regarding the oversight responsibilities of this committee related to the resolution of significant audit findings. This proposed change to the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee handbook will formalize the process by which the legislature continues its oversight beyond a review of the audit findings. The new language is flagged and begins at the top of page 41. So, Ms. Curtis, would you like to come to the table here and walk the committee through the change, please?
For the record, my name is Chris Curtis, State Legislative Auditor. So I was asked to incorporate that new oversight process that we worked on this last year into the handbook. And so that process, just as a reminder to everyone, is first focusing on those top audit issues. So that's when I come to the committee and I give you an overview of what I consider to be the top audit issues. Secondly, we communicate those to the agencies out there, ask them to provide their corrective action or status of those audit issues. I bring those back to the committee. I summarize those responses. And then the committee determines whether they want to have continuous follow-up by sending those audit issues to legislative committees for their consideration during the next legislative session. And this process is meant to be an annual process, so we repeat that every year after the single audit comes out. Any questions? Representative Foster.
I have a question.
So, Senator Bishop, thank you. We're going to have Representative Kaufman add his comments, and then we will open with questions, and you'll be first in the queue.
Thank you.
I just wanted to offer, through the chair, high-level perspective. Ms. Curtis already done a fine job of that, but what this is, it's the goal here is to standardize what we've been doing that worked well. We modeled this in kind of a informal process as we talked about what we were going to do, and we worked our way through it in the committee process. But the desire was to find a way to lock it in so that we continue to do this as we see turnover on the committee. And especially as we have a higher level of turnover, it's going to come up soon, we'll have just a good set of instructions so that we can standardize.
Senator Bishop.
Yes, Ms. Curtis, do you have a ballpark on, will this add any more burden to your audit requirements already? I mean, this process, I don't have a problem with it. How much anticipated man hours do you expect this will add, or if any?
And Chris Curtis, legislative auditor, thank you for that question. So this is really, what I do is summarize the audit work that my agency has already done. It doesn't put any more audit burden on my staff. It's just extra work on my shoulders, but really that is my job. And the fact that this will help actually have more impact on the audit process is a very positive thing. So really, I think it's needed process. And it just generally, I probably can pull together the top audit issues, and this PowerPoint probably took about, I don't know, 7 hours to really. So it's not a huge impact on my workload, and I'm very much in support of this process.
All right. Just thank you for that. I just want to make sure, I know how busy you are. I just want to make sure that you don't flame out.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Also, for the who's joined us has been Senator Keel. I'd like to put that on the record. Are there any other questions or comments from committee members present or on the phone? Representative Kaufman.
Thank you, through the chair. Just when you audit, you're not auditing to audit. You're auditing to confirm conformance, compliance, or sometimes you do audits to see if a process is as efficient as it could be. That's not really what we're doing here. We're doing more compliance work. But the goal is not to audit. The goal is to drive improvement or to assure compliance. So to that extent, if we don't have a robust, simple process that we're doing, then we're really missing that key opportunity in all these audits, and the audit findings build, as we saw in the past, and you have languishing issues that need to be resolved that don't. So I think ultimately, the more we drive conformance through auditing, the better the terrain will get. As an auditor, which I've done in the past, if you go into a place that has started to improve the process of the previous audit processes, it starts to get easier to go in there and work. It's a less chaotic structure to go in and interface with. So it's kind of an odd thing to think that doing a little bit of extra work can actually start to drive down the future workload.
Thank you. How I see it is that the hard work is done, and the large book with 50 to 80 findings is oftentimes not pared down, but the prioritization of what the top 10 findings are, and then whittling it down from there and shining a flashlight on those top 10, or starting on the top 10, and then maybe add another 10 and another 10. This is a tool by which the entire legislature can use in the following legislative session and however they see fit, whether it has they bring it up in their committees, whether they propose legislation, whether they have conversations with various commissioners. But what it is this large book that you put so much time and effort into, rather than languishing and collecting dust, we actually have created a tool, thanks to Representative Kaufman, to begin to dive into the findings and addressing them. And so rather than having continually 70 to 80 findings each year, maybe we can start getting them down to 30 or 40, just more manageable. So I think to me that's the brilliance behind the suggestion, Representative, so thank you for doing that.
Thank you to Ms. Curtis for the it's been a real partnership working with her to put this together.
So with no further comments, Representative Tuck, I'd like to make a motion.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee adopt the updated and revised Legislative Budget and Audit Committee handbook as presented today.
Is there any objection to approving the revised Legislative Budget and Audit Committee handbook? Seeing and hearing none, the revised handbook is approved. So our next order of business is a brief presentation on the significant audit findings from the fiscal year 21 single audit. Ms. Curtis, please proceed.
Again, this is Chris Curtis, State Legislative Auditor, and
want to make one point before I start the presentation is this oversight process extends more than just a single audit. It actually revisits special audits and performance audits as well when we're looking at those top audit issues and provides a mechanism for following up those findings that come out of performance audits as well. So I'm on that, for as far as this slide in front of you, I'm on that focus number one step where I identify those top audit issues for basically for federal, for fiscal year FY22, which is when we audited FY21. So that might be kind of confusing. So first, I can't not go through this without highlighting financial statement opinion modifications. I don't plan to go into these in detail. We have three reasons we modified the financial statement opinion. We believe two of them will resolve themselves for the FY22 financial statements. And in July, the committee recommended pursuing the court a court resolution for those taxes and royalties that we receive as a result of FERC decisions. So we're pursuing a court interpretation of that issue. So there's really nothing to reach out to the audit agencies on right now, but I can't not include this in the top issue. The second issue is the financial statement errors. I want to highlight that I did see improvement when I compare the FY20 financial statements to FY21. But there were significant errors that if auditors had not identified them, there would have been material misstatements. So this really is a summary of, 10 to 12 actual findings, and we kind of merged them into one area. I want to highlight that I believe that the Division of Finance that produces the statements, they are understaffed, and they do have inexperienced accountants, which I believe impacts the timeliness and the quality. However, the legislature did approve two new positions for this division last session. They have not hired them yet, but I have high hopes that once they get these folks on, these are high-level accountant positions, that we will see an improvement with the quality and timeliness. Next area is Medicaid eligibility determinations. We continue to find high error rate when we test compliance for Medicaid eligibility. It's an ongoing issue. The fourth is a new emerging issue for FY21 single audit, and this is Medicaid behavioral health. They have a new system, and the system we found had a defect that caused claims to be paid despite invalid procedure code and modifier combinations, which is a system edit. There were some logic flaws in the new system that resulted in paying some ineligible services, and we found evidence that ineligible providers were being paid and unenrolled providers. So lots of different problems with that new system. Further, we found that certain behavioral health providers were not screened and enrolled in accordance with federal requirements. So an issue new for the FY21 single audit.
Thank you for this. Can you, by chance, recall off the top of your head the magnitude? It's been tens of millions of dollars.
Through the chair, I don't have it off the top of my head. It was, I think it was limited. It wasn't a huge amount, and I know they were able to reprocess and claim and fix some of those errors after they are identified. So I can follow up, though, with you and get you that exact number. But they are contained for the public that is looking at this. The single audits themselves that is available online, we have a reference to those finding numbers, which you can find in detail, including any question costs. And oftentimes, we're unable to identify the actual amount that was an error, just that there's some logic flaws and that it is producing errors. Okay. So this, again, is an emerging issue. A fifth area is the temporary assistance for needy families, often referred to as TANF. This is a problem. Federal program. This is, I think, the fourth or fifth year we've had material noncompliance. We have material internal control deficiencies. I guess material weaknesses is the right term. Material noncompliance. It really got some struggles within the Division of Public Assistance with in the new Department of Health. So, again, we will reach out to the agency asking for a status on the types of corrective actions they can take to address this.
So, quick question for you is, is this program also audited on the Fed end as well, whether it be annual or every couple of years, do you know?
Chairman Imhoff, the federal government kind of relies on the state audit of this program. They will review the single audit, and they do will reach out to the department and work on their corrective action. The department has to provide corrective action, and the feds will review that corrective action and either agree that that's sufficient, and or sometimes they have been known to do their own targeted reviews if they see a problem that's not being addressed. So, in this particular program, they might actually, the feds sometimes either this or food stamps, they can assess a penalty to a state, and then the state can actually, instead of pay that penalty, they can use that and say, okay, we're going to take this amount of money and do corrective action with it to address and improve controls, that type of thing. So it all depends on what the federal oversight agency wants to do about the findings.
And is this done via written communication that is searchable by this committee, that we could follow the path of communication between DHSS or the TANF program and the feds?
I don't think it's searchable. We get copies of their management decisions, so we can track. There is something called the summary of prior year audit findings in the back of the single audit that tracks prior unresolved findings, and the department provides the current status of all of those old findings, and we do audit that schedule. So I think if a member of the public wanted to see how things were being resolved or if they were being resolved, that would be one area that they can go look at. Thank you. Further questions? Thank you. The next area is not out of the single audit. This is the Alaska Mental Health Trust Advisory. Trust Authority. And this, these recommendations come out of our review of the use of trust cash principle for the purchase of commercial real estate investments instead of sending that principle to the Permanent Fund Corporation for investment. So the 2021 audit is actually a follow-up of the 2018 audit. And I recommend that the committee reach out into the authority and, you know, basically ask, you know, what the current status is on resolving these recommendations. I know that the authority has a lot of new trustees, and the chair that existed when we did this audit last year has moved on. And I know that the executive director also has moved on. So there's a lot of new management at the authority, and I think it's prudent to reach out and, you know, gauge their progress in resolving the recommendations. Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Ms. Curtis, I'm trying to recall, what is the Mental Health Trust Authority's disposition toward the argument that they shouldn't be doing this at all? In other words, did they stop doing it, or are they?
Through the chair, initially back in 2018, they their response to the audit was very, we're still looking on evaluating whether you would be. They have stopped doing it. They did transfer. They made whole the permanent fund piece of the investment by transferring some reserves that they had. So they definitely addressed the problem. But then we had a little bit of concerns about that corrective action because we felt it really took the reserves down to if there was a downturn in the market that might put them at a serious position. To recognize that they weren't inflation proofing timely, unless we think that they would be more prudent. So we made a list of recommendations, but I know that the Trust Plan Office actually posts these findings on their website, and they have a response to the findings to the public to look at. So, and they've been, I would say this last audit, they were very cooperative in working, you know, kind of a team effort to look at what they do. And they, you know, disposing of these commercial assets would be something beautiful to do over time if they find the right time to dispose of them.
Sure. Madam Chairman, I think it's a recall that, you know, there was some reluctance on liquidating those real estate assets. One or more of them had some substantial negative cash flow performance issues. And there was, I think, in my opinion, anyway, some hesitation even to respond to respond to the audit, the original audit, so the matter come before. With all that being said, I think they're slowly working through the issues, and I think my recommendation here today about having an update to the legislature in January, February, or what have you, but a mental health board would be probably a good idea, just to go over the history and the current status of where we're at. They seem to be, you know, moving forward. It's just a little slow, but they are moving forward, and to the best of my knowledge, they are not, and have not since this first audit came to fruition, moved forward with any of its real estate acquisitions. So there's been a directional change.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I agree that it is slow and they are moving in that direction. There was a lot of resistance when this first came up. I know that. But I think through dialogue and the conversation that they've kind of they're coming around. So when this first, if I remember correctly, they got kind of lucky. I mean, they were able to capitalize on some real estate, primarily in Texas, a lot of commercial properties that they ended up buying up that nobody wanted at the time, and then they did go up in value. And if I remember correctly, and I might be wrong, was this money supposed to have been deposited and invested through the Permanent Fund Corporation? That's how it was supposed to have been. They handled it themselves. Is there any way that we could just turn over these assets to the Permanent Fund Corporation? Is that a possibility as a result or an outcome that we should seek?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, that is something I did talk to the previous executive director of the Permanent Fund Corporation about. And in the recommendation in the audit itself, I do talk about their reluctance to do that. They definitely have some quality concerns about the assets and giving them managing the assets. So they did not want to. They do not want them. Is the gist that I got, and I tried to put that flavor into the recommendation and report. It has kind of moved forward where one of the things I thought that they could do was transfer them in place as part of inflation proof. They were behind in their inflation proofing, and I thought that one might be an option to consider. So I think what the board wanted to do at the last audit was they're still trying to resolve about whether they want to sell them or not, but they do know that wasn't the right time to sell them. If that's the direction they wanted to go, it wasn't exactly the right time, and considering the pandemic's impact on commercial real estate, it's really probably not the right time.
So the when you say they don't want them, you're talking about Permanent Fund Corporation doesn't want the assets. Is that correct? So the only way that we can really correct that, if they don't want the assets, is to sell it off. And so I can understand the hesitancy of selling them off if the market's not good right now to do so. So maybe we should just go ahead and allow this process to go whatever the right time is.
Right. Through the chair, the management of these assets legally is the authority's responsibility. They're the ones that are going to make these decisions. And really, the legislature's role is more of an oversight in the law that dictates how, the legislature set the law that dictates how the funds were to be invested at the beginning. And it was part of the settlement, which makes it very difficult to change the law in regards to how the cash principal is invested. And I think that in the big picture, all of the board members that were involved with these decisions back in the day have all gone, and that there's a new authority board that is has learned from the results of the audit. Any further questions on this page? Thank you. The next issue is the Alcohol Beverage Control Board. So during FY22, we did both a sunset and a special audit. And I think the most material findings out of those two audits, Kim, is that the Alcohol Marijuana Control Office had significant vacancies. And those vacancies were really impeding their ability to adequately support the board. So
So we highlighted that. It'd be good to get a, you know, current status on how that office is doing as far as their vacancies. In addition, we found that the ABC board license process is antiquated, very manual. It needs to be automated, and that their licensing database really needs to be either replaced or significantly upgraded. So it would be good to reach out and kind of ask the status on where they're at with those issues. And then the last issue is another performance audit, the sunset audit of the Board of Pharmacy. And out of that process came the controlled substance prescription database. And extensive discussions occurred during the Board of Pharmacy's extension hearings this last session. Legislators expressed frustration at the lack of information upon which to base policy decisions. There was multiple, these House Finance Committee hearings on this. A lot of back and forth on how exactly to address this issue. And the department came and testified that it had secured some funding to do a study to help produce some information upon to provide the legislature. And I think it'd be a great opportunity to, in addition to asking for the current status of these recs, to ask a status on that study. A good mechanism to say, okay, you said you're going to go forward with the study. Where are you at with that project? That is the final area for consideration, and the plan is to send these letters asking for its current status this week, and ask for a response by the end of November, and then which will give me time to summarize these, be ready for the next LBNA meeting in December to summarize them.
Thank you, Chris, for your work on this. So there is no committee action at this time. This presentation was the action in response to the previous motion that we passed. And it will be up to the new legislature that will be voted in here shortly to take these findings and go with it to their own committees and subcommittees. I think in the future what's going to be important is to work with the new LBNA committee on prioritizing what are the top 10 findings. And then just be diligent about working through. So are there any questions at this point from folks here or on the phone? Representative Kaufman.
Just a little housekeeping operational note. Some of these are bundles of items. And just to put the thought out there, when we started to work these through, the former items in the past, we had it was item 1A or B, we had to break them out. So it's 8-year, it may end up a little segmented because sometimes the closure of one gets ahead of the closure of the second or the third. And so just a note, in the future, you may see that terminology being used.
Thank you. Well, we are in the infancy of this process, and I'm sure things will be tweaked as we go forward. So thank you. So moving on to the agenda, our next order of business is to go into executive session to consider the final audit report for the State Medical Board Sunset and the preliminary audit reports for the Board of Certified Direct Entry Midwives Sunset and the special audit of the Alaska State Commission for Human Rights. So, Representative Tuck, do we have a motion to go into executive session?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee go into executive session under Uniform Rule 22B3 for the discussion of matters that may by law be required to be confidential. And I ask the following persons to remain in the room or online: the legislative auditor and necessary staff through the auditor, any legislators not on the committee, staff for legislators who are members of the committee, and House Finance staff and Juno for access to their office.
Thank you. Is there any objection to the executive session motion? So seeing none, we will go into executive session after a brief eddies to clear the room. And I do see we have three senators on the line. I hope you stay. We have a bunch of folks also online for the RPLs. We will be coming out of executive session eventually and be addressing the RPL. So just to let you know, give us a little bit of time. So we're going to go into executive session now. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We are back on the record. I just want to make sure that I've got this okay. So we're back on the record, and I'm going to discuss whose members are present right now. We have Representative Andy Josephson, Representative Ivy Tonholz, Senator Stedman, myself, Natasha Bunninghoff, Representative Tuck, Representative Foster, Representative Kaufman, and online, Senator Marchicki and Senator Peel. So during the executive session, we discussed confidential matters relating to audits. We will now consider two motions, one for the final release and one for the preliminary release of the audit discussed. So Vice Chair Tuck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the following audit be released as the final audit report and added to the State Clinical Board Sunset Audit.
Is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, the final audit is approved for release. Second.
I move the following preliminary audits be released to the agencies for response. That is the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development Board Certified Direct Entry Bidwise Sunset, and the Office of the Governor and the Alaska State Commission for Human Rights Special Audit.
Is there any objection? Seeing none, the preliminary audits are approved for release to the agencies for response. Okay, so the next item of agenda is we rolled the RPLs to the bottom, and we're taking these up now. So very quickly, our next order of business are the RPLs submitted to this committee by the administration. Earlier today, OMB formally withdrew RPL 08-2023-0130 through 0133. These four RPLs have been replaced by RPL 08-2023-0165 and 08-2023-0166. The other two RPLs for the Department of Natural Resources and the Judiciary Department are unchanged. We have department folks and OMB and Ledge Finance on the phone. What we're going to do is take a brief at ease just to make copies of these new documents for the committee members. So it'll take just about 5 minutes, and then we'll come back online. So don't anyone go away, and we'll be right back. So we're going to take an at ease now.
Sorry about that. Okay, so here we are back online. Everyone has received in the committee here the new RPL, and we have Alexi Painter, Legislative Fiscal Analyst, and Neil Steiniger, the Director of Office of Management and Budget, online, who has been available to answer questions, as well as representatives from each of the three departments, and Legislative Legal is also available for legal questions. I'd like to start with Mr. Neil Steiniger. If you could explain what the actions that you just took and why, and we'll go from there. So thank you.
Thank you. For the record, Neil Steininger, Office of Management and Budget. Thank you for considering these RPLs and providing us the opportunity to provide revised RPLs in order to accommodate some of the comments made in the legislative fiscal analyst comment on the previous RPL. So originally in October, we submitted four RPLs for the Department of Commerce in order to distribute grants to seafood processors. We had broken that into four RPLs in order to accommodate the overall grant amount from the federal government of just over $30 million. To fit that under the restrictions provided in HB 281, limiting RPLs to a $10 million limit. Based on conversations with legislative finance, It appears that the way that that was broken up didn't quite fit into the standard set in HB 281, so we've provided two replacement RPLs, one that falls within the Division of Community and Regional Affairs and one that falls within Serve Alaska, both under the Department of Commerce, to provide for at least $20 million of the $31 million in grant award to be distributed out to seafood processors. So those are the two RPLs, 08-2023-0165 and 0166. We also have two RPLs, one for the Department of Natural Resources in the Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys related to an award from FEMA, as well as one for the judiciary related to a wellness court enhancement project in Fairbanks.
So thank you, Mr. Steininger. So just to kind of give a quick overview, there are four originally RPLs from the USDA Seafood Processors Pandemic Response. This is back from COVID. And this money has been trying to get out the door for the last year or so, and for a variety of different reasons is not. It is my personal desire to get this money out sooner rather than later. The seafood processors had to go through quite a bit of exercises to COVID mitigation in 2020, and I think even a little bit in 2021. They've extended these expenditures. I don't know what their cash positions are at this point. This money was intended for the seafood industry, and there's been a significant delay and holdup. I understand that we're trying to get this money out in the RPL process because it is federal money. However, with the legislature had put in parameters about no more than $10 million, we are trying to find a way to do this under those parameters. So, Mr. Steininger, can you first comment on the delay and why this has taken so long to get the money out? And we're seeing this here in November of 2022. And then number two, why setting it up the way that you're proposing somehow fits or does fit? And perhaps we can ask Mr. Painter and Megan Wallace under the parameters set forth by the legislature last spring. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Von Imma. I'll give a very high level on the delays. If we want to have kind of more specifics on the delays, we do have some representatives from the Department of Commerce. However, in short, there were a couple factors that led to the delay in distribution. First, the federal award was delayed from when we had anticipated it in early of the calendar year. It was delayed by a month or so. Then in attempting to get the grant guidance out, we had some delays in our ability to actually set up the grant portal in order to have the grantees apply. Then during that solicitation process, some of the grantees requested an extension in the timeline to provide their responses. As a result of each of those things, we ended up not having the grant applications and the grant determination finalized by the close of the fiscal year, which meant that the appropriation we were operating under had termed and we weren't able to actually issue those grants. We now have all of those grant applications, and so we need access to expend federal receipt authority in order to actually make those payments. The $10 million restriction, HB 281, it's raised as a restriction to restrict our ability to increase through the RPL process an appropriation item by more than $10 million. The first set of RPLs that we had provided would have done so. It was four separate RPLs for less than $10 million, but all addressing the same appropriation item. And that, as legislative finance noted for us, didn't really fit the intent of that restriction in 281. What we've proposed instead is two RPLs for $10 million apiece, addressing two separate appropriation items. The Community and Regional Affairs appropriation allocation, and the allocation to Serve Alaska, which falls under Community Regional Affairs as well. Both of those budgetary allocations serve to provide a purpose of providing grant activities out to communities throughout the state. So we feel they have the legal authority to engage in this grant. They both have the legal authority to engage in this grant and make these payments out to the communities, or the fish processors, rather.
Thank you, Mr. Steininger. So I'm just going to, again, leave the discussion just for the moment to kind of set the table here. Again, my desire is to get the full $35 million out to the fish processors. What we have right now is a proposal for $20 million. We have a remaining $15 million. It's still a conundrum. I'd like to have, Ms. Megan Wallace, Ledge Legal. The question that I have for you at this time is, with the Supreme Court ruling on the Wilikowski case, does it play into this action that we're considering today, in that we are the appropriating body, and if we, and then the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee is the subcommittee or the interim committee, and it's the appropriating body. Is there room for this committee under the Wilikowski case, where that we are the appropriating body and can appropriate however we see fit, regardless of statute, the full $30 million $35 that we see here, however we do it, whether it's four tranches of $10 million or however. So, Ms. Wallace, if you don't mind chiming in on that, if possible, if you can do that.
Hello. For the record, this is Megan Wallace, the Legal Services Director. The legislature remains the appropriating body. The Legislative Budget and Audit Committee is an interim oversight committee, and under Alaska Statute 3707080H, which is also known as the RPL process, the governor can submit an RPL asking for an increase of an appropriation item based on additional federal or other program receipts. And then LBNA has the power to review and approve those RPLs. If the LBNA committee does not approve or does not take action, there's a 45-day wait period before the governor could then proceed with expending the additional federal or other program receipts requested in the RPL. There are several legal issues with the revised RPLs, or the two RPLs that are now before the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee. Based on my office's quick review of the two RPLs sent over this morning, the issues that we have flagged really center on the let me get the appropriate number for you. Is on the RPL with that is numbered, that is associated. With the appropriation on page 5, line 18 of HB 281, and I believe that is RPL 08-2023-0166. And so that RPL seeks to increase the appropriation for the Serve Alaska allocation in HB 281. The issue, the legal issue with respect to that RPL is that while there are multiple RPLs that were submitted, from the text of the RPLs themselves, this appears to be a singular program, and separating the RPLs into multiple RPLs appears to be an attempt to circumvent that section 77E of HB 281, which is now Chapter 11 SLA 2022, that contains the limit of an increase of, to an appropriation item for FY23 to no more than $10 million. And so what this really looks like is a $20 million increase to this program, which was originally approved as an RPL back in December 2021 by this committee, using the appropriation authority for the community and regional affairs allocation, which is the allocation that is used in RPL 0165. The other issue that I see with using the Serve Alaska allocation is that it raises appropriation constitutional issues similar to the CARES Act RPLs that came before this committee back in 2020, in that there is no program for the Serve Alaska allocation that is currently used for this purpose. And the RPL statutes under 3707-080H are arguably not intended to be used to create appropriations. It's to be used to increase appropriations for items that the legislature has already appropriated for, and the committee does not, the legislature cannot delegate to a singular committee to make appropriations during the interim. Those are the general legal issues that I see, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, there'll be several questions here, and so we're just going to kind of move through. All right, we'll start here, Representative Bill.
Through the chair, and this could be, I bet there will be agreement on the answer. The legislature will convene typically on the Tuesday after Martin Luther King Day. We can pass a bill in 72 hours if we want. Does this opportunity, the question is to any of the three folks here, does the opportunity lapse if we don't see that now, or could this just be attended to in mid to late June?
So, Mr. Steininger, can you respond to that, please?
Thank you. And with permission of the chair, may I send that question to Hannah Lager, Admin Services Director for the Department of Commerce, who might have a bit more nuance and detail on that matter.
You bet.
Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, this is Hannah Lager, Acting Admin Services Director for the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. Through the chair, Representative Joseph Sen, our concern with distributing the funding is certainly the continued function of the seafood processors. We have had a number of different inquiries from them over the recent months. It is very clear that the funding is needed by those entities and that they are anxious to receive it. From the timing of the inquiries, it appears that many of their fiscal years may end in December, and so that would be our largest concern with January, is getting the funding in their current fiscal year.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think the, these are, I guess, collateral damage in the last budget cycle when we put the $10 million on. And this appropriation was viewed as, you know, the previous year wasn't even on the radar screen. So we end up with the issue in front of us today. And for those watching at home, it's just a matter of sequence and timing to get this money out. So if we, you know, we need to, in my opinion, move as quickly as we can to disperse these funds, like we have the other COVID relief funds throughout, you know, multiple appropriations, without tripping up litigation or disputes with the administration to slow it down. So the quicker we can get it out, the better. But we need to also follow statutory guidelines and make things run smooth. So I'm in support of getting as much of this on the street as quickly as we possibly can. I'm a little concerned about the potential of adding some of these funds into a, what we'll call a supplemental bill, but for those watching at home, it's an early appropriation bill in the legislature outside of the main budget bill that we're working on. And it's normally the piece of legislation where we fix the current fiscal year we're in, budgetary gaps. when they call out a fast track supplement. But just because it has the word fast in it doesn't mean it's quick. It could very well be passed in May and signed in June. So there's no guarantee that it would be quick. And I think it's highly unlikely, although technically possible, is that Josephson said the legislature can take quick action once we convene as a body on an appropriation bill. It's highly unlikely because they're very charged and lots of opinion. And a lot of members want to add other things. And we end up having, you know, an out-of-control appropriation. And we normally minimize appropriation bills within the legislative process. And anybody that's serving the finance committees or don't know that, and what you just do is total control of what's going on with the public purse. So I hope we move forward today collectively with the administration and us as the legislature to move as much money on these RPLs through the street as possible. So we need to talk about the concern that's been expressed on RPL ending in 166. And at least move forward with $10 billion. See if we can even do more, and then talk about how we're going to deal with the rest of it. Because clearly we were going to, the legislature thought this would be gone in the previous fiscal year. Here it is November. It should have been sent out by July 1st.
Could we have a description from the administration about the distinctions between these two RPLs? Yes, is there somebody who would like to, would it be the Ms. Lager or Mr. Steininger? Okay, Ms. Lager, can you comment on the distinction and the differences between the two RPLs? Specifically looking at 160, 0165 and 0166, what, if any, differences are there between these two RPLs?
Thank you. For the record, this is Hannah Lager, through the chair to Representative Sponholt. The difference between these two RPLs is just the appropriate. Otherwise, they are for the same amount. We have discussed they are for the same program. The only difference between the two of them is the appropriation that they are increasing.
I guess I just have a comment. I share Senator Stedman and the chair's desire to get as much money out into the community as possible. I'm very concerned that we have industry that is experiencing hardship because of failure to get the funds out. I'm pretty concerned, going back to Ms. Wallace's comments, that we're getting out ahead of over our skis here and circumventing essentially the statute by advancing two RPLs, which are essentially the same RPL, which each have $10 million amount, which is our legal threshold for one individual program. And so approving both of these is getting out over our legal skis. And this committee is not an interim finance committee. I'd be happy for it to become one of them at some point in time in the future. That's not a problem for me from a policy perspective. There are times when I think that makes sense, but that's not the legal definition of this committee. We have the ability to increase appropriations, to increase receipt authority up to $10 million. And these two RPLs total $20 million for the same program. And so I think we would be getting out ahead of ourselves by doing that. And as much as I understand the frustration about the need to, the complexity of a fast track supplemental, I also believe that it's important that we follow the laws of language that we've heard a lot from the public over the last 6 years. And I think that it's important that this committee follows.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I got a couple of questions to start off with. If someone in the administration can answer, how much has been requested so far from the grant.
Ms. Longer, can you comment on the accounting of this full $35 million available? How much has been requested at this time?
Absolutely. Thank you. For the record, again, this is Hannah Lager. Through the chair, representative, the demand for this program, it was over three times subscribed. And I apologize, I don't have a total of the initial demand in front of me, but we are the award amount that has been calculated are 28% of each grantee's requested need. So over $90 million in need was identified from the CEDA process.
And if I may, Madam Chair, what is the maximum that you want to apply? The maximum amount that they can
Through the chair, the largest calculated grant amount at this point is $7.4 million for one grantee. And I believe the smallest is just over $800.
Okay, thank you. And then when was that original RPO passed by the Healthy Nation? When they gave the $35 million?
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, the original RPL was passed at the December 15th, 2021 meeting.
So it's taken 11 months to get this far.
Through the chair, yes. Our initial application period closed the end of May after the CEPID processors did request an extension of the application period. So there was certainly some setup time to get there and get all the applications in and to get them reviewed.
Okay, and thank you. And is there I have a question about CERV Alaska. Does CERV Alaska have a board?
Through the chair, there is a CERV Alaska commission that is responsible for administering awarding different grants that go out through the CERV Alaska program, but those are only grants that come through specific federal funding streams. They do not control the entire operations of the component.
Would this be one of those federal funding streams that this board bill would see?
Through the chair, no, this would not fall under the CERV Alaska Commission's authority. Just would be run through the CERV Alaska component.
Madam Chair, just a quick comment. Yes, the legislature does have appropriations authority. No, LBNA does not have appropriations authority, except for something that's already been established by the legislature, a program established by the legislature, and then appropriated by the legislature. And in this case, the legislature, because of poor past practices of this committee, has put a limit on how much they can approve on behalf of the full legislature in the interim. And that's the amount of $10 million. I don't have a good feeling about voting for this particular E2RPL. Well, the first one I have no problem with. It falls underneath what LBNA can do in this circumstance. The second one, though, is a little bit of a stretch. And it is possible that the legislature could pass a special appropriation specifically for this within 72 hours. I know that's going to be a big grab for a new legislature coming in. However, I've also seen this particular legislature, or the previous legislature, get out in 57-day session. And we really need to take action. So there's a strong will for this money to get out to the seafood processors in a quick amount of time, I believe the legislature will come through on that. I just don't think it's appropriate for this committee, helping the committee, to take more decisions on behalf of the full legislature, specifically since they put a cap on this last appropriations budget up to 281. Thank you, Madam Chair.
$10 million wasn't put in because we were so concerned with the budget out of it.
$10 million cap limit is we wanted the legislature to be involved in the discussion through these funds. I mean, the COVID money funds, not this particular fund in front of us today, but in the aggregate. It just so happens that these funds didn't get out in a timely manner, fell in under this cap. So just for a point of clarification, I wasn't in concern of any action of dealing with the LBNA committee, but wanting to put the LBNA committee on the front lines in the interim dealing with the COVID money.
So I think what might make sense is to pass the $10 million today of the original DCCED, I'll have to look at this, so 10165. It seems to be, I think that's the correct one, the more clean one. Now, that leaves us another $25 million. And we've heard from the admin services director that it's oversubscribed. And this money has been in limbo for a while. What I'd argue is that we have another meeting next month in December to address the remaining $25 million. And I suggest that the folks on this phone, Lager, the Ledge Legal, Ledge Finance, take a look at this. And also, this committee pulls himself up a bit. A couple things I'd like to point out. Number one, this money that we're talking about was passed in December 21st of 2020 under the Trump administration and signed into law on 12-27-2020. It's been around for a while. If you look at the bill, of Bill 281 that we passed, we specifically call out the 117th and the 118th Congress, which is applying this limitation to. These funds are 116th Congress. If you want to start putting a fine tooth on it, it doesn't even apply. So we could technically, if we wanted to, maybe in the next month, decide whether that maybe we do have the wherewithal to put in the other $25 million through the original process. But something that allows the experts on the phone here to decide and debate among themselves, reach out to the committee prior to our next meeting, and so we can all educate ourselves and make a more timely, thoughtful decision. My recommendation today is that we pass the first $10 million and we address the other 25 in the next 30 days and try to come up with a consensus. That seem okay?
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the beautiful things about finance committee is that the real vetting that takes place on how money is being used, how these programs are functioning, and really getting into the details and making sure that the money is going to those that really need the money, making sure it doesn't go to them that don't need the money, make sure doing what we hope they do. The RPO process on a fly like this doesn't give us that information. Doesn't allow us. I mean, I'll do my homework, but I don't want to make it sound like that I haven't done my homework up to this point. We just got these RPLs. You don't have a chance to. And now I'm going to be doing that on behalf of the full legislature. And I'll say this: that maybe the $10 million wasn't to limit LBNA. It definitely was to give the full legislature. Day, which is the same effect. I don't see the distinction. But I will take a look at this a little bit further. I had a lot of questions, a lot of questions ahead of time, not being fully familiar with this fund because I didn't sit on finance when this had come through. We do have three finance members, four of those online, too, maybe five on the on finance or not, but I feel a little more comfortable with that. But I think your process suggestion is a very good one, and I want to thank you for that.
Thank you, Representative Tuck. I do believe that we are sitting here with a very unusual set of circumstances. This is atypical for this committee. I think by giving ourselves 30 more days, I think we're making the right call.
Madam Chair, I agree with your
recommendation that we approve 165 since there's a broad consensus and wait until the December meeting for the other. But I will go ahead and telegraph that I'm going to strictly construe this law because, frankly, the whole LVNA process in the interim has not been challenged in court, and that's fine. I mean, we've been here 60 years. LVNA is part of our Constitution, as I understand it, and if no one wants to challenge it, they don't have to. But I agree with Representative Tuck that we're sort of standing here for the other, I guess, 39 members of the Nonconflict Committee, and our attorney has given us two reasons, not one, why this is problematic. December would be a month before January. If there can be a meeting of the minds that says this is how this is justifiable, I'm eager to listen to that, but I'm going to strictly construe this. And that's just like going to be my position.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. I think it's important for us to weigh all the evidence that comes in between now and then and make that final decision. Committee members can correct me. I think when we were looking at the disaster declaration, and we kicked it forward. There was in December, I think there was some question, if you recall, that may have been a violation of statute and authority, and then we went ahead and did it anyway, and then we ratified it as we all got back down together. So whether that could be applied to this, the shoehorned or the same set of circumstances, that's up for debate. We do have two more. RPLs. Do we want to discuss those? Mr. Steininger, did you want to dive deep into those other two and see if there's any questions?
Chair Von Imhoff, if there are questions of the committee, we are happy to answer them. In short, the first RPL for Department of Natural Resources, 10-2023-5089. It's through the Division of Geological Geophysical Surveys. They received an award from FEMA, an amount just less than $3 million. And then the Judiciary in RPL 41-2023-0001 has received a grant totaling $128,300 to work on a wellness court enhancement project.
Thank you, Mr. Steininger. Is there any questions from folks here or online? Okay. Is there any further discussion? Any further discussion by committee members on the RPL at this time? Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to have Representative Tuck do the RPLs that we have discussed that we've approved, and the 166 will not be approved.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair. Members, I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee approve the following RPLs. RPL number 08-2023-0165, Department of Commerce and Community Economic Development, USDA Seafood Processors Pandemic Response and Safety Block Grant Program, to the tune of $10 million for the federal operating receipts. RPL number 10-2023-5089, the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Geological and Geophysical Survey, FEMA Award, to the tune of $2.96 million of federal operating receipts. RPL 41-2023-0001, Judiciary, Fairbanks Wellness Court Enhancement Project, to the tune of $125,300 for federal operating receipts.
Is there any objection to approving the RPL? Point of discussion?
I'm just looking at the matrix here. Some of the numbers were a little different than what was just said. I thought I heard 125.
We said 128.
Yeah, maybe I just misheard.
Can you repeat it?
The last one?
Yeah, so the final RPL number 41-2023-0001. Judiciary, Fairbanks Wellness Court Enhancement Project, to the tune of $128,300 for federal operating receipts.
Is there any objection moving the RPL? Seeing none, the RPLs are approved. Is there any further business to come in front of the committee? OK, Okay. We have another meeting in December. We will be polling members to find out that date. I don't know when it's going to be, but it will not be probably after the, it will not be the week of Christmas, so we will try to do it early to earlier side. At this point, it is 12:05 p.m. and we are adjourned.